Welcome to the Health Design Leadership Podcast with author, speaker, and leadership coach, Carol Phillips. We're here to help you sharpen your leadership skills and discover the best ways to build great teams. So sit back and enjoy this episode of the Health Design Leadership Podcast with your host, Coach Carol.
Hello, leaders. I'm Carol Phillips. I hope you're making today a fabulous day. Let's talk leadership. Whether you're looking for ways to improve your productivity, reduce turnover, or increase profits, one of the best ways to accomplish all three is by improving your company culture. Smart leaders know how to create a winning work environment by prioritizing the wellness of employees while modeling positive leadership skills that build effective teams. Our guest today is no stranger to building winning teams, and I can't wait to hear what she's going to share with us. But first, let me tell you a little bit about this amazing entrepreneur. Winemaker, entrepreneur, author, and media personality, Amy LaBelle is an international phenomenon with local roots in New Hampshire, but quickly growing across Boston and the New England area. As the co-owner of LaBelle Winery, her passion, commitment, and hard work have made Amy the lifestyle personality to watch in 2023. She not only produces award-winning wines, but she launched two wineries that have put New England on the wine map, quickly positioning her as a key player in the wine industry. Amy also created the ever-growing culinary product line, The Winemaker's Kitchen. She's written a series of books, the first of which is Wine Weddings, and she has expanded the LaBelle brand into hospitality and soon spirits. Drawing inspiration from Ree Drummond, the Pioneer Woman, Nigella Lawson, and Tabitha Brown, Amy has modeled her career after leading women success stories like Martha Stewart, Rachel Ray, and of course, Oprah Winfrey. Not only does she have the tenacity and entrepreneurial spirit of these three media moguls, but she is also reshaping the lifestyle industry through down-to-earth advice, creative inspiration, and an empathetic approach. I also want to mention that Amy and LaBelle Winery have received numerous awards. And by the way, listeners, when I say numerous, I mean numerous. You need to check out all of them on the LaBelle Winery website. Very impressive. And speaking of our leadership topic, I'll note that two of the awards include Business NH Magazine Awards Top Women-Led Business Award and the Business Leader Award. A big congratulations to Amy and everyone at LaBelle Winery on these well-deserved awards. Now, let's chat with Amy. Amy, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much for being with us today and to talk about leadership from your unique perspective. But first, tell us a little bit about LaBelle Winery and your journey.
Sure. I wasn't always a winemaker and a founder of a business. Once upon a time, I was an employee, first as a lawyer at a large law firm in Boston, and then in-house at Fidelity Investments. I took a vacation from my job one day and ended up at a small, teeny tiny winery in Nova Scotia, Canada. And I guess I always had an entrepreneurial heart. But when I walked in this place, I had the complete epiphany. You know, the lightning bolts appeared, the light bulb went up over my head, and I said to myself, oh my gosh, I think I missed my calling. I think I'm supposed to be a winemaker, and I need to open a winery immediately.
Wow.
So I my career took a complete detour. And the interesting, I guess, portion of that story is that from that moment in that winery, where I had this huge, you know, desire, this huge thing put in my heart to build a winery that would be a community gathering space. From that moment that I had that dream put in my heart, it took me 4,083 days to get the winery actually open. So 12 and a quarter years, you know, to do the math, but it took a long time. And I guess the moral of that story is it takes a long time to build big dreams and you gotta be a little bit patient.
Wow, that's just a great example for people who are struggling where it does take baby steps that you just keep at it, and it might take years to realize your dream. I love that. That's awesome. What persistence, and especially since you had just started your career as a lawyer when that happened, right?
Yeah, I was only in my fifth year practicing law, which is, you know, really nothing in the world of law. You know, that's a whole lifetime of learning in itself. But ultimately, I practiced for 16 years. I love being a lawyer. I loved my job. I wasn't running away from that job as much as just running toward a dream that that I had.
And talk about transferable skills for the winery, right?
Well, it helps run the business side of things for sure. And it saves me money on lawyers.
I love that.
Yeah.
What are some of your early memories of learning how to best lead a team? Because now you're having to hire people and have leaders in your own business, including what worked well for you and what you found challenging.
So my best advice?
Yes.
I have a lot. I have a lot to say about this, but so how to best tackle that? You know, it's interesting. I had this huge dream in my heart, right? And I knew where I was going with the ship. You know, the ship was moving to the lighthouse on the other shore, and I knew how I wanted to get there, and I knew what I wanted the quality of that journey to look like. And the mistake that I made early on, and this is something that I feel new entrepreneurs can learn from, is that everybody that I hired would understand the dream, immediately subscribe to it, and it would be as important to them as it is to me. And guess what? It isn't. Because it's my dream. And, you know, you can be as inspiring as you want as a leader, and you can be as kind and create the best culture and be good to your team. But at the end of the day, for some of them, they're going to internalize it, and they're going to be right there with you. But for many of them, you know, and I have 250 employees. So, you know, I think it's fair to say that for at least half of my team, they're there to get a paycheck. And so it's not true that every single person on your team has to believe in the dream and, you know, live, sleep, and breathe it like you do. That's not going to be the case. And I didn't realize that in the beginning. I kind of went into this with this big, happy-hearted, excited, like a, you know, puppy, like, you know, super thrilled to be chasing the goal. And I would get really frustrated in the beginning thinking, why don't these people get it? Why don't they want to work, you know, hard like me? And they don't. And it's then, and I've really come to understand over the years that you just have to like hire the best possible people, treat them great, but understand that you're the carrier of the dream. Like you have it in your soul and your heart and your work ethic, not them. So you just have to lead from that perspective.
I love that.
If I knew that early on, it would have saved me a lot of heartache, honestly, because I spent a good 2 to 3 years kind of saying, why don't these people love it like I do, you know? And it's not quite the same for everybody.
I can see the challenge in that, because you feel like there's a disconnect there because you're waiting for them to feel the same way as you. But I love that, because then you realize that they're looking at their position from a different lens, so they can still be an awesome employee,
yes,
but they're looking at the business differently because it wasn't their dream and it's not their business.
100%. Exactly.
I love that. And it's funny, because I was going to ask you next, if you could start over, what's one thing that you would do differently? So I can see where you changing your perspective made you a better leader for them. So if there's something else that you could do differently during this long learning curve that you had of, you know, slowly getting to your dream, what's one thing regarding also leadership that you might do differently?
Oh, yeah, I know. There are two things I would have done quicker. One would have been to hire HR as soon as humanly possible, because managing a team is difficult under the best of circumstances, but you really, as the visionary or the leader of the organization, I feel need that buffer, that person to have the meetings with staff who is, you know, having trouble, or have a meeting to hear about, you know, problems that need to be worked out in the workplace, or disgruntled staff that's mad at each other. all of those little things, and they're not little to the people that are in them, so don't get me wrong, but all of those things really detract from a founder or a leader's ability to move the organization forward. And so HR can kind of work as a buffer on some of that stuff, and it keeps you being, as the leader of the organization, keeps you being the good guy or the person who's just in charge of pushing the company forward and leading vision and making sure standards are being met, making sure all the good things are happening. And you can have HR kind of do the harder interpersonal stuff that maybe entrepreneurs aren't best suited for.
Yes, that's so true. I love that you talk about that as a buffer. When I work with business leaders and I'm talking to them about having difficult conversations with employees, one of the tips I give them is to avoid the me versus you and kind of have a third thing in the room, which is basically the company and the company's mission and what we both need to do together to focus on that mission. And it takes the me versus you out of the equation.
Yeah, that's really good advice for sure. Because I say I work for the lady, you know, the LaBelle lady.
That beautiful logo, lady.
Yeah, that's my logo. I work for her.
That's awesome. One of your passions is giving back to the community, and I know you do a great deal of public speaking. Please share with our listeners some of the advice you share when speaking to leaders, in particular women, about some of the experiences that business women face in our world today.
Yeah, it depends on if I'm speaking with young leaders, young female leaders, who, you know, emerging leaders, I'll call it. If it's that type of group, say if I'm speaking in a college setting, I always advise those young women to work hard and save their money. Because, you know, having the ability to have a financial cushion gives you so many options later. I also advise them to really understand the financials. Don't leave that to your accountant. Don't leave that to, you know, your business partner or somebody else in your organization. You as the business leader have to understand your numbers, whether it's your sales numbers, your profit and loss statements, your balance sheets. And there is enough information out there where you don't even have to go to college to understand these things. You just have to do the work. Do the research, listen to a couple of YouTube videos. There's some great resources out there, but the numbers are going to drive your business. Whether you're a for-profit business or not, even not-for-profit businesses have to make the money work, right? And so I don't like it when, especially young entrepreneurs say, oh, I'm no good at math. Well, it doesn't matter. You have to get there. You have to get there. And so saving your money gives you more options and knowing your resources. For more experienced female leaders, my advice is always to kind of, I want women leaders to move past fighting the battle of equality or fighting for equal footing with men and this and that. I want that to go in the rear view, not to say that it's not still an issue. It may still be, but I don't want it to take up any more of my energy, certainly. I just want to be a winemaker who owns a winery and several businesses, and I want to lead my companies in the best way I possibly can as me. And so I do advise folks to not waste time kind of fighting battles they don't need to fight. And that goes along with another piece of advice that I like to give women leaders, and that is women leaders in general, whether they're experienced or not, and that is not to waste your days. Ever. So for example, I counted my days, 4,083 days to open the winery, right? How do I know that? It's because I made a commitment to myself early on to not ever waste a day. I always move the business forward at least a little tiny bit, even on holiday, even on my days off. You know, there's just like a little something that I'll do to push it forward. And that's made me really cognizant of the clock ticking and time moving along. And so you can't think a project's going to just happen. You have to plan it and you have to plan your milestones and you have to make something happen on that project every single day to move it forward.
And you know that it's so funny because I've just the last few years, I've learned to force myself to slow down because I'm a type A personality. And I've adopted, you know, this belief of if I just get one little thing done that day, I need to be happy in that instead of feeling like I need to get 20 things done. And if I did 19, then I didn't succeed that day.
Yes, that's a very healthy vision. And even that little win, getting something done on a project, maybe it's not the whole project, but something toward the end goal will give you that feeling of satisfaction and win for the day that you kind of need to shift your mindset to a positive place, right?
Right, right. And then realize that that's a healthier thing for me, you know, yeah. my mental and physical health. And going back to what you were saying about talking to young women and the finances, it reminded me of an old episode of Oprah that I remember watching where she had this famous person on who had gone bankrupt. And she was talking about the challenges of being a business owner. And I remember at one point she said, you know, Oprah, you get really busy and you can't be signing every single check. And Oprah said, wait a minute. Oh, yes, you can.
Yes, you can.
I still do. She said, I still do. And I know what the numbers are. And I'm, you know, I'm there every day. So absolutely. Yes. That is so important.
It is. And it's, I'm still signing every check for sure.
Yeah.
I see every bill.
You have to know what the numbers are and what's happening for sure. Amy, as you know, my leadership training is based on leading with kindness and wellness in mind. Business leaders prioritizing their own self-care and happiness and prioritizing the wellness and happiness of every member of their team. You have the philosophy to savor each day. For business leaders who struggle to live in the moment and take a breath from their crazy busy schedules, please talk to us about that.
So for me, savoring each day has to do with being completely aligned with my own priorities. So I have priorities for my life and I have priorities for my business, right? The business priorities I handle through my senior leadership team, those become our company goals. You know, we are a very goal-driven organization. We're very organized. So we know what our top three company goals are, and every single department knows what their contributions are toward those top three goals at all times. I think that give that kind of clarity of mission is a way of caring for your team as well, because then everybody doesn't feel kind of scattered and, oh my gosh, there's 7 million things we could be working on at LaBelle Winery at any given time. What should we be focused on? Oh, right. It's those three goals that we laid out at the team meeting last week. You know, that helps. That kind of helps people keep on track, and it helps prioritize things so that people know which direction to run, right? So I think that's one way we care for the team at LaBelle. There are many, many ways, other ways we do that, and I'm happy to talk about those as well. But in terms of myself, I filter things through the lens of faith, family, you know, friends, and then of course the business priorities, right? So in order to make sure that we're taking care of our faith and our family, I have to be able to balance my time with my family and make sure that I'm managing, you know, I have two teenage boys, which I think you know. Mm-hmm. And I think they're more demanding now than they were when they were babies. And so I need to be home. I need to be around when they go to school in the morning. I need to be here when they get home at the end of the day. I want to hear their stories. I want to have dinner with them at night. And that means that I end up working really early in the morning before they get up, in addition to my regular work day, or I end up working at night when they're busy with their activities or other things. So my work schedule is a little weird. I work pretty much 7 days a week. I try not to work on Sundays. That's family day. That's reserved for faith and family, right? But I end up working on Sundays because we're a 7 day a week business and this is how it is. But if I can spread my work across my week and I end up working kind of an odd schedule, that's okay, because it allows me to have the flexibility that I need to meet my priorities as my husband Caesar and I have set. And Caesar's my partner at the winery, as you know. But you know, we've set faith, family, friends as a priority to take care of those three things in our personal life, and health. Got to be healthy. Right. So we make time for that workout every morning before the boys get up, and we work out together so we can keep each other accountable. But, you know, setting that routine, setting that schedule up, and then sticking to it, which is the hardest part, right? But that's the essential part of self-care, you know, making sure that you are on track and keeping to those promises you made to yourself.
That's so wonderful. And, you know, kids know who was there for them. And even super busy parents, I'll recommend to them, have at least a family day each week where if you can't do things daily, at least once a week,
yes,
the kids know that I'm going to be, you know, with my parent or parents, and we're going to do something fun. We're not going to be talking about stressful things. And right. So they can just count on that. And that's very healthy for them.
It is incredibly healthy. And my kids rely on that Sunday, you know, time, especially since one of my sons, my older son, is working in the business now. So he's working on Saturday too. So we're all crazy, you know, all week long. And with they're very involved in many activities. And so we're running all week, but then we look forward to that family time on Sunday. We can say, oh, on Sunday, we can cuddle. On Sunday, we can hang out on the couch. On Sunday, we can cook, you know, all the things. And, you know, we do cook together as a family, and teaching them all those healthy habits and all that good stuff is so, so, so important. But it's not just me as a leader that I want this for. I want it for everybody on my team. So like, I will never, ever, ever miss a football game for my son, Lucas. He is a great football player. He's a joy to watch on the field. And I am not missing a minute of it because I need him to be able to look up in the stands and see me clapping, right? Mm-hmm. So that's wicked important to me, but I don't want that only for me. I want that for everybody. So my team has really got a very flexible schedule as well, to the extent that, you know, their job allows it, right? So even Chef Justin, if Chef says to me, hey, my daughter's got a soccer game, I'm going to change my schedule this week. Fine. Great. I love it. We want that for all of our team as well as ourselves.
Yes, that's so important. And, you know, employees are... they're really good at giving back. So, you know, when leaders are flexible with the employees, there'll be another time where, you know, they'll go over and above. So it's, you know, creating that win-win and then being flexible is, I think we're going in a really good direction with companies learning, you know, for everybody to listen to each other and find out what works for each person.
Yeah. I mean, for us, it's always felt like a two-way street. As long as the employees are willing to flex and bend in both directions, that is, you know, okay, you've got your, you know, kids' commitment this afternoon, go do that. But I hope that means that, you know, you're going to be back on later tonight, or you're going to put some time in on Saturday to make that up and make sure your work's done on time. So it has to go in both directions to be a good relationship, but it's completely something that the world has to lean into.
Absolutely. Right. When both are two-way streets, they work so much better together than when people, you know, are more like playing tug of war and they don't even realize that they're playing tug of war instead of creating this win-win.
Yeah. And one of the really big hurdles that I've been trying to figure out for a decade now as a leader is how to get, in order to have that not tug of war that you just mentioned, you have to be able to get employees over the hurdle that it's us versus them, like leadership versus employees. And I think that's also a really hard hurdle to get over. Like, sticking it to the man, or, you know, all that kind of old concept of, you know, employee versus employer. It's really hard in a family business to kind of navigate that.
Yes. And, you know, for years and years and years, that was acceptable mindset in the workplace. And so I think forever we didn't realize just how unhealthy that was and how it didn't help productivity at all. One of the other things I wanted to ask you is, if you can share with the listeners some of the additional ways you and the LaBelle Winery leadership team create a great company culture for your employees.
Sure. I can probably illustrate this best with an example. So for us, a great company culture starts with communication, always communication, you know, letting folks in on what's happening at the company, where we're headed with the company. So they're not just working in a vacuum, you know? One good example of that is how we operated during the COVID shutdown. So as you may remember, and I hate talking about this, but it's a good example. It's giving me PTSD. I'm sweating right now. I just want you to know that. Starting to have like heart palpitations. So for hospitality businesses during COVID, very stressful time. We were ordered shut by the government on March 17th of 2020. Now, for a hospitality business, that is lights out, no more, no more revenue, no more nothing. And so at that time, I didn't have two locations. I only had the one, thank God. And I had 102 employees that day. So I immediately had to lay off 90 of those employees.
Wow.
12, right? That's how we figured we could make it. I mean, most of those employees were hands-on, you know, cooks, waitresses, you know, dishwashers, all the things that I no longer would need because we were shut.
Yes.
To hold on to my management team with all my might, because it takes you so long to build such a team, you know?
Yes.
But I laid off 90 of my staff, and that was a very bad day, like the worst of days for me. Not only was I worried about my company going down the tubes, but I was worried about my family, of course, and also worried about all of the team members that I had to lay off and the ones that I still had. I mean, gosh, we didn't know what was happening in the world, and I didn't know how I was going to take care of these people, because I do take it as a serious responsibility to make sure, you know, these people can have their livelihoods and they can have their lives, right? So one of the commitments I made, and this is an example of our company culture, one of the strong commitments I made that day was that I was going to continue to pay for the monthly platform that allows me to have communications with my whole team, real time, all the time. At the time, it was a platform called Schedulefly. And it would shoot out emails that I would send to all my employees and a text as well. And so there was no way they could miss the communication from me. So I committed to myself and to Caesar, my husband and partner, that I would send a message every single day to tell the team exactly where we stood in terms of COVID and our business success or recovery from it and what we were doing to survive, right? So I proceeded to do that. And I still feel like there might be a book in those messages someday, because I look at them occasionally. I go back and look for this or that, but it was such an incredible experience for me to send these messages every day, like saying, hey, you know, I'm so sorry that we had to lay you off yesterday. This is where we are. This is how much money we have in our employee emergency fund for you people. Cause we had an emergency fund. We always have at LaBelle for people, any employees that run into trouble, they can apply to get some help from LaBelle, which is cool. But we started to grow that fund during COVID through raffles or through, we raffled off a lunch with me and Caesar. Like, I don't know if that's a good prize or a penalty, but
that's a good prize.
So, you know, when we reopen, we'll have lunch with you. We know we're going to reopen, blah, blah, blah. And the community really supported these efforts, and we were getting some nice funds into the employee emergency fund. So we were able to help pay for rent and groceries for people who were no longer able to work at LaBelle during that time, et cetera. But those daily messages, I think, like, hey, folks, this is how much money I have in the bank. This is how many days I think I can make it last. If I can get assistance before then, or if we can reopen, we'll be able to make it to June, you know, 2nd or whatever the date was. It was bananas how much information we shared. Or, hey, folks, today I spent, 5 hours on hold with the Small Business Association's emergency loan hotline. I was 784th in line, and I waited because I have to get this emergency loan. So we were just telling them all the details of the struggles we were going through every single day, so they would know how hard we were fighting to save the business on their behalf. And then I would also sprinkle in a lot of health advice, like, hey, folks, this isn't the time to be over drinking or drinking yourself to sleep every night. Get out there and exercise, take your vitamins, drink your water, do something. So as a consequence, a lot of them call me mom now, which I'm not sure I love. But anyway, what the result of this, all of this communication was that everybody was on the same page. Everybody could celebrate when we were able to reopen together, and everybody came back. And so that was a real victory on our end. When we were able to reopen, we only had two of those 90 people not able to return. And it was such a happy homecoming and such a beautiful day when we reopened. Man, I still have goosebumps right now just talking about it because it was so special.
Well,
so
you're giving me goosebumps.
Well, that's an example of the communication and the care that we give to our team and the regard that we have for them, that we'll share all this information and that we'll let them know where the company stands so that they can be involved in the story, not just the work.
I don't know what speaks more loudly to employees than you doing that daily and being so transparent with them, because transparency, trust, communication, not leaving people wondering, that is gold to employees. And so the results of your story speak to how successful that was with, you know, all but two able to come back. That's amazing. And thank you for being a business leader that is really thinking about what your employees are going through and how you can help them.
Oh, thank you. That's my pleasure. But it's a double-edged sword too, because the trick there is I want to be transparent. I want to share lots of info, but I recently had that experience. It was about a year ago, probably, when I was digging into my numbers and seeing that some of the practices we had adopted in the labor force at LaBelle were not translating in the new market post-COVID. And so I was making some adjustments and looking at my financials and going, I gotta make a little U-turn here. And I shared a little too much with employees maybe. So there's a fine balance there. And they were like, I started getting messages. Are we in trouble? Should I be looking for another job? I'm like, whoa, no, no, everything is fine. No need to panic.
Yeah, so, it's all about balance, right?
Yeah, you gotta be real careful about how you share that information.
Yes, there needs to be that healthy boundary. And sometimes it's not super clear to do that all the time for us.
No, my inclination is to be an open book. So sometimes I have to guard against it.
Well, I think employees would prefer that than the opposite.
Yes.
And then them left wondering. So now I want to pivot and talk about, you're also the author of a series of books, the first of which is titled Wine Weddings, The Ultimate Guide to Creating the Wine-Themed Wedding of Your Dreams, which is not only a stunningly beautiful book with fabulous pictures, but it's chock full of great information for people planning a wedding. And let me say, even if you're not planning a wedding, this book will make you want to plan a party or an event. Because it really taps into that part of us that wants to have fun and be at an event that is put together really well. And I can even picture business leaders using the advice in your book to plan successful corporate events. Tell us a little bit about this great book and how you're helping to reshape the lifestyle industry.
Oh, thank you so much for all those kind words. I had such a joy writing that book. It sprang up because I've talked to too many couples over the years that were so stressed about their wedding and so stressed about, how do I do this? You know, many of these people have never run an event in their life, yet now they're thrown in the midst of trying to plan maybe the biggest event of their life. And so it made me say, there's got to be a better way here. I'm going to write a book to help these people and make it a little simpler and make it a little easier along the way. So that's how the book got born. That book literally fell right out of my brain. It took me five weeks to write that book.
Wow.
Because I just was so impassioned about it. And then there was a month or two of editing and I had to get all the photos put together. So that book start to finish was like 4 months, which is absolutely breakneck speed, as you know.
Yes.
You're an author as well. But it just, it was almost like it was coming through me, that book. It was ordained. And so I do hope it's helping couples plan, but it's not just about weddings, as you say. You know, every event that we put together, especially now in this post-pandemic world, you know, so grateful to be able to get together, so grateful to have these times together to make good memories. And I will say too, with inflation and everything costing so much now, you're not going to have too many chances. You're going to throw maybe less events overall because of budget purposes, especially if you're a corporate client. But you want the events you do throw, you want to be exceptional, stunning, most importantly, memorable. You don't want to just throw any old event that nobody remembers the details of, you know? And the best way to do this to me is through telling a story, and telling it through the lens of a theme is always a really helpful thing for an event. And for me, wine is a great theme, no matter what your event, because it's elegant, it's timeless, it's something that most people like. And whether or not you're drinking it, you can certainly cook with it and elevate your food game. So there's always a place for wine at the table.
That's awesome. You know, in another life, one thing I want to be, Amy, I want to be a professional wedding guest. I just want that to be a job that pays well, because I love going to weddings. I think they're just the most amazing, exciting, you know, so emotional, and everybody's just having fun.
Yeah, me too. I love going to weddings. And I, even though, you know, we host 200 weddings a year at the wineries, among our properties, every single one of them still makes me cry and still gives me, you know, all the chills. So I'm like you, I love weddings. But Carol, now that I know this about you, I'm going to watch out and make sure you're not crashing our next wedding at LaBelle.
Here's Carol again.
There she is. She's at the open bar.
She's got a wig on this week and she's still not fooling us. Oh, that's hilarious. Amy, please tell our listeners how they can learn more about you, LaBelle Winery, and how they can purchase your book.
So the LaBelle Winery brands can be found at labellewinery.com or on all the socials at LaBelle Winery. To find out more about my personal and lifestyle brands, like my wedding consulting, my business coaching, or all of the television work I've been doing to promote Cooking with Wine, or the cooking, the Winemaker's Kitchen Cooking with Wine products, you can go to amylabelle.com or on social handles. I'm at Amy LaBelle Winemaker. Following me on at Amy LaBelle Winemaker gets you an insight into all of the projects I'm doing at home, all the recipes I'm doing with my family, my boys, all the cocktail development that goes into the recipes we use at the winery, and the gardening, house lifestyle stuff I do around the house. So that's fun.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, Amy, it's time for Coach Carol's quick quiz.
Oh boy.
Are you ready?
I think so.
I'm going to throw out some questions at you just for fun. And so our listeners can learn a little more about you. There's 5 questions. So give me the first thing that comes to mind. Are you ready?
I think so. I'm nervous.
Question 1, what is your favorite holiday to celebrate with your employees, and what do you do?
Definitely, it's the Christmas holidays. We have a company meeting. We do a white elephant swap. That's hilarious, generally. And we do, Caesar and I like to do a raffle where we get a whole bunch of awesome prizes and we give things away. So that makes us happy.
That sounds like so much fun. I will be crashing.
Last year, somebody won a wine fridge. Like, it's just fun.
Wow. Silly stuff. I love it. All right. Question 2. If you could have an entire month off with your family, where would you go and what would you love to do?
Oh, Carol. I mean, I would be going to, well, oh, geez. Now I'm thinking there's 2 places I would go. If it was with my family, I would probably go back to Mexico. We love Mexico so much. And we would probably go and hang around the beach and eat tacos and drink margaritas in San Jose del Cabo, which is one of my favorite cities on the planet. It's not Cabo San Lucas. It's its sister city just next door. I don't want to tell people about it because I don't want it to get too popular. It's nice and quiet. But San Jose del Cabo has the most beautiful people, the most beautiful culture. And gosh, we love the food and the ocean. Oh, and you see the Sea of Cortez and whales. It's really stunning.
Wow.
Anyway, that would be a month with my family of pure heaven. We would really enjoy that. But if I was just with Caesar, then I would want to go to the French countryside and go to all the wineries.
Why doesn't that surprise me at all?
That's why I'm laughing.
But I like the tacos and margarita part. You're speaking my language.
Well, that's a city to put on your list.
All right, here's an impossible question for you, Amy. Here's a third question. You can only sell one type of wine for the next month. Which one are you choosing?
What kind of twisted world do you live in that you make these questions up? Let's see. If I can only sell one kind of wine. Jeez. If I can only sell, does that mean I can only drink one kind of wine?
No.
Thank goodness. I think that if I could only sell one kind of wine, I would sell Sauvignon Blanc. Why? Because it's an unoaked white that's crisp and very citrus forward. So it's very versatile wine. It's going to please the most amount of people. It's tiny, tiny bit of residual sugar. So even people who don't love wine can drink it and really enjoy it. It's nice in the winter. It's nice in the summer. It's great to cook with, but most importantly, and even above having a great glass of wine, it makes an awesome cocktail. It's a great cocktail ingredient. So
Ooh.
It's really versatile.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Check out some of those recipes.
Yeah, there's so many at amylabelle.com. Please check those out.
Terrific. I love that. All right. Question four. You're alone on a deserted island with your top three favorite foods. What are they?
Who's cooking these foods? Never mind. Too many questions, too many follow-ups. I just definitely need to have buffalo chicken tenders. I know that's shocking because I'm a chef, but I love fried buffalo chicken tenders, really good ones. I would need Thai peanut sauce on anything. So really spicy, like Thai peanut dressing, like a Thai peanut vinaigrette is my favorite thing. Love it.
Good.
It makes me want to eat anything I put it on. I don't even care. And then my other thing would have to definitely be tacos. Pretty sure I could eat tacos every day for the rest of my life and never get bored.
Aren't they the greatest thing?
Yep.
Taco Tuesday, Taco Wednesday, Taco Thursday.
Yes, I'm on board.
The whole week. Okay, question five. What is some favorite advice you share with new leaders at LaBelle Winery?
Oh my goodness, this is a great question. The first thing I always tell everybody is to ask questions, ask so many questions. And in fact, I just told a new leader who has been promoted. He's been at LaBelle for a few years, but he just got a new bigger role. And I said, if you're not asking me questions, I'm going to get very nervous. So you better ask me questions.
That's great advice. Yeah. And that shows them that you want them to learn and open up and feel comfortable reaching out.
Yeah. I don't want them to get stuck in this, like, oh, cause I did this as a young leader. I almost never asked questions of people. I would go figure it out on my own because I didn't want to look like I didn't know what I was doing, but that's so silly because I could have saved a lot of time and shortcut my energy a lot quicker towards success if I had just asked people who already knew how to do it.
Yes. Yes. And you know, there's part of our society that still kind of makes us hesitate to do that. You know, we're afraid to look like we're not as knowledgeable as we want to appear, or we're afraid of them, you know, having a negative reaction. And in some workplaces, that's acceptable. And we need to get beyond that.
Yeah, I'm trying to push it, you know, at one company at a time at LaBelle. And I'm trying to work on my boys with it too at home, because it's something that parents can do with their own kids. You know, ask me questions. What do you need to know? Let me explain it to you. I remember once my son, when he was little, he was probably 7, you know, years old or something like that, at the grocery store, he said to me, How did you know how to figure out how to order the meat at the counter? Like, how did you know to get the ticket? Like, how do you figure all these things out, Mom?
Wow.
And he was like, I think he was just kind of like, how does life work? You know? And
yes.
It made me really just stop for a minute and say, Oh, goodness. Yeah, this is such a mundane thing to me now, but new people, people new in the world or people new in the workplace, they need to learn all the things that we already know and that we take for granted. So people have to ask questions to advance.
And we don't know what we don't know, and we're always learning. And it's funny because, you know, even there's things I learn now where I think, why didn't I already know that decades ago?
Oh, that happens to me every day. Yes, absolutely.
Maybe it's just meant to not be on our radar until a certain time.
Maybe so. Everything happens as it should.
Yes. Amy, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners who are creating great places to work?
I want to offer some words of encouragement. You know, investing in your team is always going to be something that pays off dividends in the end. And investing in not just the team, but the processes and the standard operating procedures that they live by, that's really going to be your saving grace, because team members can't stay forever and you can't take that personally. You know, I just had a team member, for example, leave, and he was wonderful. And I'm so sad that he's gone because he was so good at his job. But he left to go open his own business. And he said, you know, Amy, I'm inspired by what you've done here. I need to try it. I need to try to do my own thing. And so I could be really bummed that he's gone. And I am, because now I have extra work on my plate. And I'll work it out, you know, in a couple of weeks when we settle back down. But I think the bottom line is that team members aren't going to stay with you forever, but it's still a great investment to make, because it's not all about you. It's about them too and their lives and what you're impacting in their life. And so that legacy that you're implanting in them will live on, even if they leave the company. And if you operate in a way that has standard operating procedures and processes in place for every single job in your company, when someone leaves, it makes it much less painful to slide somebody new into their spot.
Wow. What a great compliment to you, you know, that he said that you inspired him to do that. Because for some people, that's a much bigger leap mentally than for other people. And I love how now more workplaces are embracing team member success, even if it means them leaving the company.
Absolutely. And we applaud him. We're happy for him. We're going to go to his grand opening, you know, because it's great. It's absolutely wonderful. And it's exactly what I would have hoped for when I started my company. I used to be an employee. Remember, I was an employee for 16 years before I started my own company. And so when I started LaBelle, it was real nice when people from my job, my employment, were cheering me on. That was important to me.
Terrific. Amy, I want to thank you so, so much for being with us today. And thank you for being such a positive, inspiring role model, not only for other business leaders, but for the young people and anyone who has a dream that they want to turn into a reality, no matter how fast or slow they do it. What was that? 4,083 days.
That's right.
Thank you so much, Amy.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thanks, Amy. Listeners, you can learn more about Amy and LaBelle Winery at their website, labellewinery.com, and check out Amy's book, Wine Weddings, on Amazon. Thank you to all the business leaders listening today who are making their companies the best places to work. Be on the lookout for our next podcast and make today a great day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Health Design Leadership Podcast with Carol Phillips. Be sure to click on the subscribe button so you won't miss any new episodes. Join our online leadership dream team at askcoachcarol.com. If you're looking for an engaging speaker for your next event or an effective trainer to strengthen your leadership team, contact Coach Carol today. Thanks again for listening, and make it a great day.